Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback Writer.
Well, hello, everybody. This is the Writer's Lounge, where we showcase new authors, and this is show number 122. It is September 19th, 2022, and I am your host, Tom Riddell, and tonight Terry Brown will be off. She's got a personal problem going on, and she'll take care of that and be with us on the next show. A little bit about tonight's show. Tonight, we have on Troy Ratliff, who wrote Something Found, a Coin. So stay tuned for that. He'll be on about quarter after the hour. Now more about us. Here's where you can find us out there. Find us on Facebook, The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. Find the book reviews of all of our current shows over at thomasridell.net. That's T-H-O-M-O-A-S. RIDDELL.net in the blog section, and the on-demand radio shows can be found there on the podcast page as well. Or go over to the Blog Talk Radio site and search for the Writer's Lounge. Find me on Twitter at TomRiddell56, and our email is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com. If you want to be a guest on the show and have your book reviewed, put guest request in the subject line, and we will get back to you. A special note, we can now be heard on your Alexa device. Subscribe to Apple Podcast and ask her to play The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. I'd also like to put in a plug for Goodreads and Readsy Discovery. They both do a great deal to help authors and readers alike, and I also review books on both sites as well. And now, tonight, special, first time in a long time. Having hosted the Writer's Lounge for over 11 years now, I'm always excited to announce a new sponsor to the broadcast. And now I'm very happy to introduce Atmosphere Press to the sponsorship spot. We'll be hearing more from them as we move forward. And if you're a writer just starting out in this exciting world of writing and are looking to get published, this message is for you. We'll be right back.
Hey there. We're Atmosphere Press, a professional and welcoming alternative to traditional publishing. Founded in 2015 by Austin-based writer Dr. Nick Courtwright, Atmosphere Press is dedicated to getting awesome books in print, while also ensuring that authors retain 100% rights, royalties, and final artistic autonomy over their own work. Atmosphere has published over 700 books in a range of genres, from novels to poetry collections to memoirs and children's books, and our books have received countless starred reviews and book prize honors. If you're an author looking for a true partner in the bookmaking process, we hope to hear from you. Check out our website at atmospherepress.com and consider sending us your manuscript today.
Okay, and once again, welcome to the Writer's Lounge, Atmosphere Press. Once again, look for them over at atmospherepress.com. Upcoming authors on the Writer's Lounge on October 3rd, 2022. That'll be 2 weeks from tonight. Author Judalyn de Bournay will be here with Great Crossing, a very compelling and rich story of love, hardship, and endurance on the great frontier. This is historical fiction storytelling at its best. Return to 1807 and experience the turbulent beginning years of our nation, politics, slavery, and the people surrounding it all. On October 17th, 2022, author Leslie Kane will be here with Secrets in the Mirror. It's a psychological work of fiction that explores the effects of domestic narcissistic abuse on multiple generations of family. It's a topic of great importance in the real world, too, and hope you'll tune in to these exciting upcoming events and shows. And now the next segment of our show, Writer's Topics. We cannot have Terry tonight, as I was telling you at the top of the show, but she will be back here in a couple of weeks. And I do have a subject to talk about tonight, and we've talked about it before, and I would like to propose the question, what does it take to be a successful writer? Well, you will encounter a lot of ups and a lot of downs. I'm not a what you might call a successful writer. I haven't written a lot of works, but I have a couple to my name, and I do know that through those processes, even with a couple of books published, you will have, as I said, a lot of ups and a lot of downs. And all I can say is you need to follow your dreams. If you believe you can do it, you can do it. And I think our author tonight will be here, and he, I'm sure, will have words about that also. And readers and writers will appreciate and recognize the following story that I'll play. It's about 7 minutes long, and then we'll be back to talk to Troy Ratliff.
That story is a perfect example of how one success can destroy 1,000 failures. Some of the greatest people in the history of the world were failures at some point in their life. Stephen King, the famous American author, was one of them. When Stephen King was just 2 years old, his father left to buy a pack of cigarettes and never came back. He left the family. When he was a child, he apparently witnessed one of his friends being struck and killed by a train. He had no memory of the tragic event. He left to play with the boy, but later returned, speechless and in shock. Later, his family learned about the tragic death of his friend. Some people are suggesting that this event, even though King has no memory of it, may have subconsciously inspired some of his darker works. Stephen was interested in writing from a very young age. He began writing for fun while still in elementary school, and that's how his first stories were born. He earned 25 cents apiece from his mother. It was a way to encourage King to continue his writing. By the time he was a teenager, he received more rejection slips than acceptance letters, but he didn't let the rejections discourage him. What did he do? He pounded a nail into the wall and hung up his rejection slips. But soon, the nail couldn't hold the weight of all the rejection slips, so he replaced the nail with a spike and continued his writing. In 1970, King graduated at the University of Maine with a Bachelor of Arts in English. He had to work all kinds of jobs, like gas pump attendant, janitor, and worker at an industrial laundry to support himself and pay for his studies. A few years later, Stephen King lived in a double-wide trailer with his wife and two kids and drove an old car that broke down very often. They also didn't have a telephone because they couldn't afford it. They were very poor. Even though he had a teaching certificate, he couldn't get a teaching job, so he had to work at a laundry service while his wife worked at Dunkin' Donuts. Later, he did get a teaching job with a salary of $6,400 a year, but that was not enough to make ends meet. Stephen King couldn't afford his own typewriter, so he had to use his wife's one from college. He worked on his novels in the laundry room at a desk that was put between the washing machine and the dryer. He would lock himself in the laundry room to do his writing. It was there that he created his first hit novel, Carrie. When King first started writing Carrie, a novel about a girl who can control objects with her mind, he typed only 3 pages and quit. Before he could finish completing the script, he was overwhelmed with depression, and in anger he crumpled the pages and dumped them in the trash can. He was very disappointed in himself because he couldn't write from a woman's perspective. The story was going to be too long for any magazine. I couldn't see wasting 2 weeks, maybe even a month, creating a novella I didn't like and wouldn't be able to sell. But luckily, the next day his wife found the wrinkled pages in the trash and told him to keep writing. He was determined to quit, but his wife insisted, "You've got something here. I really think you do." And she was not wrong. 9 months later, the book was done. He sent it out to a list of publishers, and 30 publishers rejected it. "We are not interested in science fiction, which deals with negative utopias." They did not sell. How his life changed. Shortly after that, he received a telegram from editor Bill Thompson, saying that Carrie had been accepted for publication and that he would receive a $2,500 advance. It wasn't much, but with that money, Stephen King bought a new car and a telephone, and he continued his teaching job. A few months later, one phone call changed everything. It was Bill Thompson again. He asked King if he was sitting down before he could tell him the news that would change his life. He told him that Signet Books had the paperback rights and he would receive $200,000. I was still standing in the doorway, looking across the living room toward our bedroom and the crib where Joe slept. Our place on Sanford Street, rented for $90 a month. And this man I'd only met once face to face was telling me I just won the lottery. The strength ran out of my legs. I didn't fall exactly, but I kind of whooshed down to a sitting position there in the doorway. The rest is history. King has since published more than 50 books, all worldwide bestsellers. His books have sold more than 350 million copies, many of which have been adapted into films, television series, comic books. On your path to success, it's good to have someone to push you and motivate you to stand up, even if you fail. King's wife was his rock throughout his career. Even when they were very poor, she constantly encouraged him to write. When he didn't believe in himself, she believed in him. History is full of incredible stories of successful people who failed, but never gave up. You will never know what you're really capable of unless you fail sometime. Because with every failure, you learn, and you put more and more effort to finally achieve your goal. Never let failures bring you down and make you stop believing in yourself. Don't waste your precious time crying about your failures. Try again. You feel weak when you fail, but the power to stand up and face your failures is what define you. Because people who give up easily after failing don't succeed in life. on your way to success, filled with many failures, let one thing illuminate your path. Hope. Remember, hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things, and no good thing ever dies. So, what's your story?
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. The moral of the story is never give up and always search for somebody out there that will support you in whatever you do. On this show, it's all about writing. So if you have somebody out there that can help you along your way, even with all the failures that you're going to have, and you're going to have a lot, do not give up. Keep going, even if you have to reach into that waste paper basket, even though now it's all done on the computer and we don't usually have a lot of paper trails anymore, but it's still reaching for something that might have been great that you threw away, that could still be great if you reach for it and let somebody else to help you along the way. And now the main event, which would be Troy Ratliff, Something Found, a Coin. And I want to remind everybody out there, if you're listening live, because right now we are live, and if you want to call in and talk to Troy or myself at area code 914-219-0868, we'd love to hear from you. That's area code 914-219-0868. That's for the live callers out there. And now my review of Something Found, a Coin. Todd Freeman led a normal Midwestern life, a decent job, married with a son he adored, and then horror strikes. His son is killed while fighting overseas, and his marriage soon ends because of it. Todd needs a change. He quits his job and moves to Florida, a total change from the life he lived. He lives out a dream of being an artist and finds a new hobby of scouring beaches with a metal detector, looking for small treasures and returning trinkets that beachgoers have lost. He finds new purpose in hunting down and returning those lost valuables to people, but his happy and purposeful life is about to change dramatically. He finds a mysterious little coin the size of a penny, and it's this little coin that precipitates a warning and a wave of violence that causes Todd to flee his beachfront home. He later finds out that a small little coin holds a clue to one of life's all-time mysteries, the Bermuda Triangle. Todd Freeman's strength and bravery will be tested as nefarious individuals now chase him for what he now holds in his pocket. And he finds something even more amazing while fleeing from these individuals. It's a magic that stuns and awes him like nothing he has ever encountered in his life. Soon after I started to read this story, I have to admit I was thrown off a bit and wondered if I would even continue, but I stayed with it, and I'm glad I did. In my opinion, the author presented a backstory and history of the main character's life after the opening chapter, but in my view, this backstory should have been presented first. It added depth to the character and interest to the plot, and it kept me glued to the page. At that point, the story took off to be very exciting, mysterious, and suspenseful. I could not put the book down. I wanted and needed to know more about this little penny and the story behind it. After the last word was read, I wanted more. Looking forward to reading more in this series. Very well done. I loved it. And now it is my pleasure to welcome Troy Ratliff to the Writer's Lounge broadcast. And we'll have a little bit of magic ourselves here by pushing the magic button. And that should bring him to the air. Hello, Troy. Are you there?
Ahoy, hoy, Tom. I am. How are you?
Very good. You made it all the way from the magic of where are you at?
I'm currently actually in Ohio by way of Florida, by way of California. So I'm a bit of a traveling man recently.
Oh, Very good. I like to hear that. Somebody that likes to get around quite a bit. Looking at your very interesting bio on Amazon, I'm very intrigued. Tell us about yourself. What inspired you to write and to lead what looks like a very busy and exciting life, as you just alluded to?
I have actually been a creative pretty much my entire life. First off, thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate you reaching out to me. This is I'm really excited about this, and I'm very happy to be here. Mm-hmm. I have been writing since I was 11 years old. It's always been something that has attracted me, that I've just picked up. I ended up handwriting my first novel when I was 14, never published it, but hand wrote the whole thing. And that eventually led me into reading more genres and books that I honestly never would have found myself reading normally. And it just led to a love of speculative fiction. And very early on in my writing career, which I do feel started at 11, because I was pretty serious about it right from the start, and I've kept with it for all these years. It's just the finding the creativity and finding the magic that's in writing helped me realize I kind of want this to be a long-term thing in my life. I want it to be a career. And I've pretty much not been nonstop with it ever since. It's been an odyssey, to say the least.
Yeah, very good. Curious, in that handwritten novel that you wrote at 14, how many words did you write? Do you have any idea what the word count was?
I don't know what the word count was, but I hand wrote it by candlelight because for some reason in my 14-year-old brain, I thought, you know what, I'm going to really try and tap into the pose and the classics and see if I can get this going. But it ended up being 401 handwritten pages. It was a pretty lengthy, complex sci-fi novel, but who knows, maybe one day it might see the light of day, too.
Oh, then you still have it, then, tucked away somewhere.
Oh, yeah, I still have it. Yeah, I still have it. I still have the idea in my head. I've most of my stories, the beginning of the show with Carrie, with Stephen King, I heard that same story years ago, and it kind of scared me to ever want to throw away any writing. It's just, there's an audience for that. I know there is. I really do try to keep a lot of my stuff nearby, but even stuff that I wrote when I was younger, it may still be collecting digital dust, but it hasn't been forgotten, that's for sure.
In regards to your book, Something Found a Coin, did you ever partake in beachcombing with an electronic device? Or if you did, did you find any treasures?
I have not on the beach, but in my time living in Ohio, I'm originally a Buckeye. I'm originally from Ohio, and I grew up on 5 acres out in the country. And my dad actually had a metal detector that he had lying around, and I asked him, "What is that thing?" And he says, "Oh, it's a treasure hunting tool." And of course, you say that to a little kid, and you know immediately the dollar signs light up in your eyes, and you're ready to go. Okay, I'm gonna go find buried treasure in the backyard. Never found anything. Found a couple of cool rocks. I think I may have found an old penny, but it didn't whisk me away on an adventure, though, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I was down in where was it in Florida a couple of years ago on a cruise and had stopped by a beach, and I remember seeing some people walking along, and one gentleman had a pole, and he was swishing it back and forth. And I said to my companion that I was with, I said, "Look, that guy looks like he's blind." And then when he kind of moved forward a little bit, I noticed that, no, it wasn't one of those poles that the blind people use. It was actually a metal detector, and he had headphones on. So he was he was listening very closely to see if he could pick anything up. And when I connected with your story, I thought, geez, that's interesting. I got to continue with this story. So, the idea behind your story was great and really piqued my interest. Any similarities between you and Todd, the main character?
Actually, quite a bit. I'm sure probably one of the questions is going to be, how did this story come about? The story actually is something of a dedication to my brother. The entire story all started basically around January 2008 when my older brother passed. And about 4 months later, to try and, you know, calm my family down and let them know, hey, I'm in good health too, even though I'm 25, nothing's going to be happening to me, I'm okay. He died of a congenital birth defect. He had an enlarged heart. And so I went to Florida to visit everybody and, you know, let them know, hey, I'm okay. And I took a little trip down to Key West, and I think it was the combination of being in that new environment. You know, I've never been to Key West before. I'd always wanted to, and because my family was living in Florida at the time, so I flew back there from California. And while I was there, I took a trip down there, and I think it was just the rawness of my brother's death combined with this new environment just kind of came together and made this story kind of hatch in front of me, before my eyes, really. The entire way back up, my family lives more in the center of the state, so Key West is a little bit of a jaunt. But on the way back up, I was just the wheels were turning. Needless to say, it was all kind of coming together. And so, you know, the book kind of just happened in under unfortunate circumstances, but it grew out of something that became really beautiful to me personally.
Yeah, it had some very interesting detours in our, you know, as we go through life, there's moments that we can remember, and I certainly can in my life, where you're on this path, and all of a sudden, uh-oh, we have to take a detour, and something happens, and then you wonder, what if I stayed on that same road, and what's going to happen now that I'm on a different road? It's very interesting when you reflect back and see all the changes that happened to you because of this other path that you took in life. And it's certainly, some people call it fate. I don't really buy a lot of that. I think it's more of a decision. It's willpower. Whatever you decide to do, you end up doing, which is very interesting when you're looking back on an event like that. But it was really good what you did. And I want to remind everybody once again out there, if you're listening live, of course you're not dead, but you can call us at area code 914-219-0868 and talk to Troy. And I almost called you Todd. So that's your main character. So I got to watch that, but, tell us about some of the other books. I know you've written other books, and what's it like to win an award and have the description of best-selling author before your name? And you are a best-selling author.
I'll tell you, I wear it with an absolute badge of pride. It is something that you were talking earlier about never giving up, the ups and downs of writing, and There was a point that soon after I published my first book, which was called Do I Bother You at Night? It was a standalone horror novel. I published that in 2013, and being the novice publisher that I was stumbling through trying to figure it out on my own. Given this was back in the early days of self-publishing, not the nexus point of it, but something of an infancy of it. Now it's kind of an old hat that, you know, self-publishing is bigger than traditional publishing. But back in those days, to try and figure it out on your own, which is what I did, I was so adamant about making sure everything was right, making sure everything was perfect with the publication. And the publishing process is definitely the stressful part of it, but it was the writing that was fun. The horror novel, Do I Bother You at Night, was published in 2013, and I always describe it as Signs meets Stephen King. Is basically take out the aliens and put in Stephen King weirdness, and that's basically my book. And I had it, you know, still published, still available on Amazon. But I will say that one thing that I did do is I did take a break soon after. I took a break from writing for about 5 years, and then I didn't publish anything. I just needed some time to kind of reevaluate my writing career. I published this and didn't really do as much as I hoped it would, but again, I kept telling myself this was my first time. So when I took that time off and really said to myself, okay, if I'm going to come back, I'm going to really go for it this time. You know, I'm going to try to go for awards. I'm going to try to go for number one, try to, you know, give it literally everything I got. There's much more information out there. There's, you know, the industry in itself has grown to a point where it's so, there's so many people who are living off of their writing now. It's just a reality we live in. So when I decided to come back to it, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to really push this. So those are my only two novels I've published, and I've published three other short stories on Amazon too. And I did the short stories first just as a kind of way to, you know, get my feet wet, kind of figure out what it is I'm doing. But I also knew that the price points of Amazon are kind of restrictive, and the fact that you can only go down to 99 cents, well, you can buy a whole novel for 99 cents. Well, now we're at a point where, you know, Amazon has expanded to the Kindle Villa, the different options that you can have. For smaller stories now. I mean, it's a whole new world compared to what it was back when I published my first one. So, and that gives hope to me and so many other writers out there that can, you know, expand this and make this their life, and do what they love. There's a lot of opportunities out there, but I definitely have quite a few coming down the line. I'm actually still working on the sequel for Something Found as we speak. So, yeah, I do have quite a few published, but I think like most authors, not as many published as I would like.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned Kindle Villa. I'm also on Kindle Villa, and I found it challenging, but I think it is a good format to be on, especially if you're just kind of petering along and trying to come up with a story in your head as you go. I think it's a great little feature to have, and it's a great little system. But it must be your magnetic personality, Troy, because your beach combing has somehow found somebody here that wants to talk to us. It's very rare in the show. People are usually shy, but we have somebody listening out there, and I'm going to bring them on right now, and I don't know the name, but I can say that they're from area code 863. So 863, go ahead and ask your question to Troy.
Hi, Troy. My name is Branson, and I'm sitting here with my brother, and we both really love the book. My older brother's favorite part is about Huey's map. So we just want to ask, since you did say you have a book coming soon, what can we expect? And I'm anxious to know what's going to happen.
Oh, thanks. Writing a sequel has been a challenge because, you know, when you set up a book and you set up especially a trilogy, because, I mean, that's what this is. Something Found is a trilogy. When I first started writing, I was definitely a person that was not against plotting. I was definitely someone who just wanted the story to just flourish. I wanted it to just kind of come out as it did, to just see what would happen with it and just see where it went. Actually, the story I wrote when I was 14 was the same way. But once Something Found, that, you know, with everything that happened with my brother and how the story just kind of flourished in my head, I suddenly realized, wow, this is either going to be an 1,100-page tome, or I can kind of break this up and make it a series. And around the same time I was coming along with the idea, the industry was suddenly changing and saying, and kind of pushing authors, saying, hey, sequels, series, these kind of things are good. And what's interesting is that finding out how much I love plotting was something that really, really profoundly changed my writing process. Because I knew I was going to be writing a sequel. I knew I was going to be making this a trilogy. So one of my favorite lines when it comes to writing is, truth will always be stranger than fiction. Fiction has to make sense. And so if I'm going to be writing a trilogy, I want to make sure that even though it may be fantastical and it may be, you know, dealing with the Bermuda Triangle and everything that I kind of throw in there, I still want it to be able to say, okay, this makes sense. This is a good story, and it kind of goes that route. Now I absolutely am addicted to plotting. I love, love, love plotting a story, almost to the point where I almost love it so much that it almost feels like, oh, wow, the story is done. But I got to remind myself, no, it isn't. You still got to publish this thing. But Yeah, kind of a similar viewpoint, though. It's just it's one of those things where if I'm able to you know, kind of lay it out and see it, now comes the work. Now comes the real work of sitting it down and getting the words to paper or the words to the digital screen. Good question,
right.
Branson. Thank you.
Yeah, Branson, thank you for calling. I appreciate it and hope you continue to listen to the Writer's Lounge.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I'm very appreciated being on.
Okay, take care. Have a good night.
Thanks, you too.
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad I was able to get a call.
Yeah, we managed to pull one up. It doesn't usually happen, so you got the magic, I guess. And from also, yeah, you must have a magic. And now I'm going to really put you on the spot here, Troy. I see on your Amazon bio. On your Amazon bio that you also do voice impersonations. Can we get a sample of that?
Oh, man. Oh, boy. My voice impersonations have actually a little bit gone by the wayside. I've actually kind of transitioned that more into karaoke now.
Okay.
I used to do a little bit of Simpsons voices, a little bit of Krusty the Clown. Hey! So
there you go. Any famous stars?
Oh, famous stars! Oh man. Well, I mean, can I always throw out an all right, all right, all right. There's nothing wrong with that. Throwing that out there every so often.
Okay.
Little Matthew McConaughey never hurt.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay, now, how do you get yourself in a state of mind of being able to sit down and write a novel? What do you do to prep yourself?
For any – oh, wow, that's a good question. For any new writers out there, find your groove. That's what I can say, is find your groove in your comfortability. It's not always going to be comfortable. But to jazz myself up to write is I just remind myself how fun it is to actually do it. That's really the best part of it is to really narrow down what it is that you're writing to get across and find the fun in it. For me, because I write such kind of crazy fantastical stuff, I know it's not going to be a slog. It's going to be something that just kind of comes out of me because it's something I may be mulling over and thinking about right at the moment. But just honestly tell yourself what it is that you're doing this for. That's another big reason. Why are you writing? What is it about that's why are you wanting to do this? And ask yourself that, but then also remind yourself the process is just an enjoyable thing, that this is why you want to do it. But of course, a lot of people, they say they want to be writers, but whether they actually sit down and do it, that's the question. So
yeah,
that's a very good question to ask.
Yeah, I'd like to take a poll to see how many writers out there in the beginning wanted to sit down and write a novel because they wanted to make millions of dollars like Stephen King.
Right.
I would bet anything. I would bet my money on it that if we talk to most of the writers that have been on the Writer's Lounge and even some of the best-selling authors, well, we've had a few of those too. And, of course, you are. But I would imagine that as you get started, it's no longer about the millions of dollars. It's about the crafting of the story that matters most and getting the readers to read your book, whether you're going to get them to read, two books or whatever. If it's a real page-turner, you've hit gold. But would you agree with that?
I would absolutely agree. I think that, everyone, when they think novelist, they still are in the mindset of what the back jackets of so many books used to say, like, oh, he divides his time between Chicago, Hawaii, and New York. You know, it's like there isn't a whole lot of authors that can have three places like that anymore. I've reached a point where it's like I would like sustainability. If we're talking financially, I would just be able to be comfortable with my writing and it sustain my lifestyle, which is, a typical kind of a careered salary. But as far as the whole idea of millions upon millions, that's But the process of what it is, that the bigger benefit is putting it out there, and the self-satisfaction that you get from it, knowing that you've accomplished the accomplishment that you've gotten out of it. And yes, to absolutely put your words out there and have people read them. That is an amazing feeling to have. That is definitely something that's that you chase after as a writer. But the accomplishment, the self-satisfaction, and just knowing that, you know, hey, I can do this. I'm good at this, and I know I can do it. That sometimes is even bigger because you don't know where it's going to take you.
Right. And I also wonder about Stephen King. If he had written Carrie in 2015 and were to have it published, would he have become what he became in the 1970s in this environment? Because, as you know, the market is flooded with writers.
Right.
And I just wonder if he would have broken loose during this time with his same talents that he has now, and he continues to write. And even if he writes garbage, people are going to buy him.
Right.
So,
he writes a laundry list, they're going to buy it. His grocery list, they're going to buy it.
Right.
I mean, and,
right.
and there was something that was said recently. I can't remember where I read it, but they said that you know, there'll never be another Stephen King. There'll never be another Beatles. There'll never be another
yes.
Picasso. Yeah, those people are they did something for their time that just hit. And
yep.
you have to ask yourself, what are you doing to make yours hit? What is it that how are you going to stand out? What are you bringing to the table as a writer and
right.
a storyteller?
And
so,
with all that's out there, with all that's out there with social media, and you got to be really something to rise to that position that a Stephen King or you know, like a Michael Jackson or somebody like that
Absolutely.
Would write to in
Absolutely.
Their artistry. It's got to be phenomenal. So
there's a reason why they're the exceptions.
Right. In that respect, what is the most difficult aspect of writing and what is the most enjoyable to you? You mentioned plot. I think that's probably when you're most enjoyable.
I definitely enjoy making a plot. I know a lot of writers will really think and really really try to let the story come as it is. But for me, plotting is something that just it feels so good to know I have a map and to be able to have a map and say, look, this is where it's starting, this is where it's beginning, and let's have some fun in the middle. I think it's one of those, I think that's probably the most enjoyable for me is plotting and the actual writing of it, especially when there's times when I'm writing something out and maybe I get a paragraph, into it and I think, oh, this actually kind of connects to something else. And you start kind of seeing the flow of the story kind of come together and you start seeing the poetry of it. You start to see it kind of come together as the story that it's going to become. The worst aspect of it for me, honestly, and I think I've heard a couple of your authors talk about that on your show, but the marketing side of it,
yes.
the fact that, you know, having to wear those different hats, having to be a social media manager, having to find editors and find people who will make killer covers for your books and submitting to awards, or if you're going the traditional route, the bombardment of sending out to publishers and agents. That's where the real grunt work kind of comes, but you can also make it fun too. I mean, there's options of making memes, there's different programs, so you can kind of have fun with it at the same time, and that kind of builds your brand. But I would say definitely the marketing side of it, because that was part of my biggest mistake with my first book, is I had spent so much time and finances trying to just create the book that by the time publishing day came, I had completely forgotten about marketing. And
uh-huh.
I know normally a lot of people would kick themselves for it, but my thing is that, you know what, I know I wrote a good book and I put my everything into it, and it was just something that at the time this was my first one. I was still learning. But definitely the marketing side of it is definitely hard for the indie writer, that's for sure. That's definitely the drudgery, but it, like I said, it can all be fun if you make it.
Right. Right, I agree. Like Todd, you're a lover of art. Talk to us about that. What is it like being in front of a canvas as opposed to being in front of a computer?
They're definitely different, that's for sure. It's almost like driving a stick shift versus driving an automatic, almost. It's the same kind of creative aspect of it, but you are in a different mindset and you're in a different setting. I've been writing since I was 11, but I've been drawing and making art since I was 5. It's just always kind of been in my genes. My dad's an artist. My sister's an artist. My other sister's a culinary artist. I mean, it just kind of runs in the family. And it's something that for me, the writing or the artistry is something that I can produce. And it's definitely a held back joy when you publish a book. There's a lot of like, you know, hey, when's it coming? When's the book going to be published? When's it going to be, you know, I want to read it. But when it's finally out there, all that joy just erupts and it's like a volcano. Doing something with artwork, it's immediate. It's visual. I made it. Anywhere from, 3 hours to 3 weeks, I could make something. And when I do, seeing their reactions. I mean, in fact, just recently I sold two of my biggest pieces I've ever made. It was 36 by 48. So they were massive, massive canvases. It took me 3 weeks to make both of them.
What do you work in? Do you work in acrylics or watercolor?
I use a lot of wood. I do a lot of woodwork, and I also use a lot of alcohol inks. I use a lot of alcohol inks with paint pens, and I create these floral canvases and these floral wood pieces that are pretty eye-catching. I'm pretty proud of them. Now, if I could only pump out some books as fast as I'm making artwork, then we'd be in business. But that's also another aspect of the art that's enjoyable, is that the speed of which I can put this out is a lot better. But it's still a wondrous joy, and I'm so proud of my artwork that people actually are excited to get to have it and to buy it. It's a wondrous feeling. It really is. It's right up there with having someone read your book. Maybe
Very
I'm just
good.
Creatively greedy. Maybe that's what it is.
Okay, let's talk to what fuels us, fuels me on a few reviews that I've gotten, and then not so good reviews. But how do you deal with reviews, and how do they affect you, and do they ever impact your next writing project?
A little bit. Writing projects for me have been so, it's interesting. When I know a lot of writers, they can think about an idea for so long, and then there's others where the story just hits like a ton of bricks out of nowhere. I mean, there can be times where I've written something and I have an idea and I want to make sure that it's just exactly as it is. And then just last summer, I had an idea that I've been trying to think of. It was almost like creative constipation in a way. It's an idea that I knew was there, but it just wouldn't come to me fully. I knew it just wouldn't be something that I could really create something out of. And then one day I had an experience with someone and it just kind of triggered something in me. I thought, I think that may be the story idea I've been looking for this whole time. And then slowly but surely, after enough time, and that's when the plotting comes in. It comes in. I'm able to really see and visualize and get the ideas, get even a title, even get a tagline for it sometimes. And when I had that, that piece of plotting right in front of me, then bam, I really do feel comfortable moving forward with the next steps. So it is a process. But it's a fun process. That's why I keep at it.
What specifically about reviews do you like or dislike?
People who go into detail as to why they liked it. I have a couple of reviews that it just says good, 4 stars. Like, really? That's it? You're with me for 450 pages and it was good. That was all. I refuse. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. I was a little critical of you in the way you presented the first part of your book with the midlife crisis and everything. I thought maybe that should have been put in, but I like when people take the time to to really look at a piece of work and to give you an honest review, like say, rather than saying, well, you know, it was really good, 4 stars, or it really sucked, 1 star. That really right. drives me crazy because
right.
how do you know a book is, I mean, first of all, in order to give a review, don't you have to read the whole book? I mean,
yeah.
how can you review something you haven't even tried? I don't care if it's a, you know, if it's a toothbrush or whatever it is that you're buying, don't you have to use it before you can review it? And if you're not reading it,
And something as immersive as a book. I mean, compared to a toothbrush, you know, it's something as that's such an escape, like a book, and really you just say good, that was all. So those kind of lackluster ones, they kind of bother me. But honestly, when people really break it down and tell me what they liked and didn't like, I love that. I think it's, and I'm not one that wants to, that ever wants to try and hide my reviews in any way. If it's bad, if people don't like it, people don't like it. I'm, to each their own. There's plenty, how many times have we heard War and Peace is amazing? I have never had any desire to ever pick that up. But some people like it. So, reviews, I think it's the importance of the reviews. I think that's the biggest thing, is that they're actually, people are willing enough. So, I mean, even if you do say good, I'm happy you actually did take the time to do that. I just would like to hear a little more what you thought about it.
And some people aren't that literary about the reviews. They just want to give you the kudos and the stars and stuff like that. And that's great. And by the way, I loved your cover art. I want to know, how did you decide what to use? And tell us about that process.
For my novels, for the books.
Yes. For the coin. Yes. I love that color cover art.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I actually use a company called Demonza.com. I found them years ago, about 10 years ago, and they actually did the cover for my first book, for Do I Bother You at Night? And I loved it so much. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to stick with these guys, and I'm glad I did, because now they are actually making book covers for people like Douglas Klieg and Dean Koontz. I think that they've really grown. They're actually a company out of New Zealand, and they have been absolutely wonderful in every way I can imagine as far as making these covers for me. They've done my paperback cover, my ebook cover, but as far as the actual cover itself, I kind of gave. So, and that was part of the process. They asked directly, "What is it that you would like for your cover?" Hearing that question is a big reason why I chose to go the indie author route. A couple of shows back, you and Terry were talking about how, this is my book and I want to be in control of it. And I totally felt the same way. I don't want, I had a vision and an idea of how I'm going to see my covers, even something like the covers, down to, where I want a period, where I want, certain words, how I want it to be set up. And to have that kind of freedom to be able to take over and be able to, run this as you want it is so powerful and so invigorating in of itself. But as far as the cover, I just wanted it to be honestly something mysterious, something that would grab you, something with color. I think the neon, the pink neon of a coin, I think kind of brought the Miami, Key West, South Florida vibe to it very well. So when people find out it's Florida, I think it helps out a little better, a little quicker. But I was hoping that I would be able to, I explained to them that this is a Key West story. This takes place in Key West. I want it to be tropical. And they did wonders for me. And I suggest them to anybody. Demonza.com.
Yes. Yeah, and I also like the concept of that small little penny, being the main character of the book. I'm a close-up sleight-of-hand magician, and I used to get involved with coins. When I saw that, I thought, that's what I wanted to write too at one time. I wanted to write a story about some small object. And I just think it's really neat because you carry it around in your pocket like your character does. And there's such magic in that little item, or such meaning, or whatever it is. not necessarily magic is in a fictional tale, but there's something about that little thing that you love so much and it's treasured. And I really like that aspect of the story. So that's what grabbed my attention in the beginning when I saw the book. You know, the color was great with the cover and everything. But enough about me. This is your ending out here. We only got a little over 5 minutes left, but this is your Oscar moment, as we like to say. Any parting words of advice to aspiring authors? And would you like to thank anyone out there for the success you've enjoyed in life so far?
Oh, mercy, yes. I definitely thank my family and my friends, my patrons on Patreon that support me. That absolutely, you know, helped me out in so many ways. Demonza, obviously, BookBub, that was a huge help. That really, I submitted to BookBub, which is, I know a lot of indie writers call it the indie lottery, but they chose me for my book, and it pretty much reignited my love for writing again. After I published Do I Bother You at Night, I took a long break. I took like a long 5-year break, and that's what I – probably my parting words that I would want to say, take breaks, but don't stop. Be okay with taking a break. Be okay with walking away from your writing for a little bit, but don't give it up. Another thing I would say is read your work out loud and often, and look at this as an investment. Look at this as an investment in your time, in your own personal culture, in your life, and look at it as like, wow, I was able to do this. This is something that I can do, and I'm good at it. Because you will be. You will be. If you keep publishing and you keep going at it and doing what my dad calls stewardiveness, just keeping at it and don't ever give up, that's pretty much the best parting words I can give any writer out there listening right now.
Right. And where can they find you out on the internet? The best place to find Troy Radliff.
Well, I was actually going to use this platform as something of an announcement. I just published my own website just about a few months ago.
Oh.
I haven't even announced it yet. So Troy
Here's
Aaron Ratliff. Yeah, TroyAaronRatliff.com. Basically, you can see all of my writing, all of my artwork. Well, not all of my artwork, but lots of links to my artwork. You can see my Amazon page, my Etsy store. You can see all kinds of, basically all of my creative nonsense that's out there. Yeah, TroyAaronRatliff.com. I just started it, and I just published it a few weeks ago, actually, and I'm really proud of it. And that also goes into like what I was telling you about, the other work that goes into writing. I basically built that entire thing by myself. I could have got some help, but, you know, being the struggling artist, you got to kind of figure these things out on your own. And I'm glad I did, because now it looks exactly like what I wanted. And that's part of the fun of the work that I was talking about earlier. If you make it fun and make this something, but still don't lose sight that this is an investment and a career, but it's all yours. So you can make it what you want it to be.
Right. Troy, it's been a pleasure to have you on the broadcast. It went very well. We could probably talk. Yes, hoo-ha. We could probably talk for another hour. It was a lot of fun. Best of luck to you. I'm certainly going to buy some more of your books out there and read, and I certainly will check out your website. So thank you again for being on. And Terry would thank
absolutely.
You too, but she's not here, and I'm thanking you for her.
Oh, thank you, Terry, and thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it. This was an absolute blast.
All right. Take care, Troy.
Will do, buddy. Thank you. Take care, Tom.
Yep, bye. And there goes Troy Radliff, another author here on the broadcast of the Writer's Lounge show. And next time, October 3rd, 2022, author Judilyn DeBornay will be here with Great Crossing, a very compelling and rich story of love, hardship, and endurance on the great frontier. This is historical fiction storytelling at its best. Until then, Terry and I will see you next time on the Writer's Lounge, where we encourage writers and readers to keep the pen and eyes to the page and to let the story begin. Enjoy yourselves and be well, and good night.
If they asked me, I could write a book. about the way you walk and whisper and look. Of the plot, it's just to tell you that I love you a lot.